councillors, we are still having some IT problems and aren't able to display recommendations on the screen. However, I'm going to open the meeting and we'll deal with a couple of items, and then hopefully by the time there are resolutions to be made, they'll come up on the screen. So I'll declare the meeting open, and I'd like to welcome everyone, especially those in the public gallery. Thank you for coming along. I'd also like to acknowledge the Gumbangia people, who are the traditional custodians of this land. I pay respect to elders, both past and present, and extend that respect to any Aboriginal people present. Gentlemen, thank you. Could I also remind everyone that this meeting is being webcast, so those in attendance should refrain from making defamatory statements. And if you have a mobile phone, would you mind turning it to silent, please? Okay, and we'll now go to apologies.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I have not received any apologies at this stage, but I do note for the record that Councillor Martin Ballingarry is not present at the start of the meeting.
Thank you. And the second item on our agenda is a prayer, but I don't see anyone here from the Christian Community Association, so we'll go past the prayer. Sorry, Councillor Buchanan.
Sorry, I was going to offer an apology on behalf of Councillor Martin Ballingarry, if I could, just because of what's been happening for him.
Yeah, councillor's aware, but we need a... You've got to lodge a form. The individual has to lodge a formal apology. Yeah. I think most councillors are aware of a death in Councillor Martin Ballingarry's family, which obviously would explain his absence, but we can't record an apology unless a formal one's been received, is my understanding.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Councillors, could I have a motion to go straight to the public forum, because we have members of the public here, and moved Councillor Buchanan?
Yeah.
Seconded Councillor Angel?
Is there an interest?
Sorry? Yeah. Sorry, the motion is to bring forward the public forum. So all that means is it's just going to come next and then we'll go with the rest. It's just to not have people have to sit and wait while we sort our IT problems out. So if there's no further discussion, I'll put that. Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Okay, so we'll now go to item 6, which is the public forum. And we have two speakers tonight. And the first is Ms. Jane Morrison. Jane is the Assistant Secretary of the Nambucca Head Surf Life Saving Club Committee. Jane, would you like to come forward? Did Peter want to come forward as well and stand there and give you moral support, because Peter is our second speaker, also from the Nambucca Head Surf Club, and Peter's the vice club captain.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and councillors. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Jane Morrison. As our esteemed mayor introduced me, I'm the Assistant Secretary of the Surf Club. But I also wear another hat. I'm the branch director of our 8 clubs, which has Nambucca in the south and it goes up to Minnie Waters Woolleye in the north. So I'm actually responsible for the life-saving operations of all of those clubs within our branch. And the reason I'm here tonight is I just want to give you a little bit of background on what surf life-saving means to this valley and to the community in general, and to speak about some of the problems that our club has experienced with the seawall project. For a long time, our club was the only club in this valley, and then our little splinter group of our Maxwell people went and formed Scott's Head. Our club was responsible for a lot of innovative projects with the training of Aboriginal lifesavers, encouraging inner west schools to come down and train them in surf safety. What the seawall has done to our club, because of the requirements that we have to meet from our governing body, Surf Life Saving Australia and Surf Life Saving New South Wales, we have to sign an agreement every 2 years that says we are responsible for providing these services at these times, for this length of time, and we will provide proficient, trained lifesavers. We will patrol from... We have a primary patrolling area, which is usually between the flags, and a secondary patrolling area. Our secondary patrolling area actually goes from just where Valla sort of meets Yurunga, and it goes past the river mouth, which is a national black spot for drownings. So we sort of liaise with Scott's Head as well. When our beach was closed off and we had the two fences, which I understand had to happen because of the nature of the works involved, but that meant we actually had to locate all of our gear, our life-saving gear, off-site. Luckily, it was relocated to my mother's household, which she wasn't happy about for the number of months that it was there because the sand was being trapped into a garage. But the downside of that was we couldn't actually run our secondary patrolling area because we had no way we could put our four-wheel drive over that section of the beach. So any checking of Shelley Beach, where there's a sign that says swimming not recommended, but people swim there anyway, we had to actually go around the roads, come back. It added 5 or 10 minutes to any call-out time, to any sort of surveillance by our club. The other impact is, because of the changing nature of the start dates of the seawall project, we were actually told this date, oh no, it's not happening now because of this. Then we were told another date. So we left our gear in the club as long as possible. And when we were told, no, you've got to get it out by the end of the week, we did. But we only took our essential life-saving gear with us, which meant a lot of our training gear had to be left in storage to the club, and we actually did not have access to the club at all. So that training gear and the other gear that was left behind, that actually meant our proficiencies, and every lifesaver has to be proficient by the 31st of December, I actually had to apply in writing to Surf New South Wales to say, can you extend our proficiencies? Because we're not going to be able, even when we were put back on the beach for the Christmas school holidays, we're not going to be able to meet our proficiency guidelines because there's just no way. And we're a small club. We've got 5 patrols, but there's a few people that have already clocked up 300 hours worth of patrols and we haven't finished the season yet. I said, we just can't do it. So we got that exemption, but that's the impact that the seawall closure had. Like I said, it has impacted our call-out responses, and it has impacted our beach surveillance patrols. We're a registered emergency service, and I don't know of any other emergency service that has been locked out of their building. We weren't given the offer of being inducted into work health and safety guidelines to even access the building so that we could access our gear, service our gear, because the other flip side of a surf life saving club and the emergency services is we have to inspect our gear for all of those 8 clubs to make sure it's up to standard. That had to be done on the grass round at 12 Bamago Street with 3 boards that were taken out, the duck, a jet ski, and the very essential, minimum essential life-saving equipment. The rest of the inspection of the gear had to take place at a later date when we could access it. I know many of you have received a copy of our letter that I wrote. It wasn't a personal letter from me. A lot of members of the club were consulted and everyone got their input. We're concerned that initially there seemed to be a lack of communication or consultation between the two parties involved. We're very grateful for the seawall project because it is going to stabilise our beach, and there are parts of our beach that are under attack from the elements. And I know people will say it's probably global warming and all that sort of stuff, but we get some horrendous tides and some horrendous wave heights, and because of the way our beach faces, we're not really a protected beach. My question to council was, if this is to continue, and I know the seawall project is continuing, what's going to happen? What access are we going to be allowed to have to our club? Because unfortunately at the moment, I don't think we can take our gear back to 12 Bamargo Street and house it in under shelter. And if anything should be housed under shelter, it should be our IRB. You're looking at $20,000 worth of equipment, and it's an essential piece of life saving. As you are well aware, we were one of the buildings that got broken into when they did three other buildings round Nambucca, the extensions to the library as well. We currently have a caretaker there because they did do some damage with inside the club. What's going to happen to our caretaker when works are resumed, because that person is living there? They're technically going to be kicked out of their home. We have a million questions, and I know I've got 5 minutes to speak, but I really don't want to speak for 5 minutes because I trained.
I think you may well have exceeded, and normally I would have to ask for a resolution of council for an extension, but given that we haven't got our IT issues fixed.
To speak, public speaking, I don't particularly like it myself. My concern is the future life-saving operations of our club and the impact that the seawall project is going to have on our club with regards to our life-saving operations and the damage that has already been concerned and caused within our club structure itself. Thank you very much for listening, Jenny.
Thank you, Ms. Morrison. Before you leave the rostrum, do any councillors have any questions to Ms. Morrison regarding the matters she raised? Councillor Janby.
Thanks, Ms. Morrison. Have you lost young people coming in wanting to learn skills like volunteers, or I'm not sure what you might call them?
So being relocated to Swimming Creek, we lost a few people. We didn't lose them. They just suddenly found excuses not to patrol at Swimming Creek because it's a dog beach and it's difficult. And at the moment, because they actually haven't completed their proficiencies, by rights, by compliance issues, I'm actually not allowed to have them on patrol until they complete their proficiency, because they're not covered and the public's not covered. Gone are the days when you could probably say, yes, I know, and I'll pick on Councillor Troy Vance because he used to be a member of our club. Gone are the days when I know Troy can swim and was an extremely good competitor. I have to actually see him do it. I have to actually witness him do CPR. I can't go. I know he can do it. I actually have to witness him. So that's one of the problems.
So how much time to get up to date with all the proficiencies do you reckon you need?
It took me going down to every patrol and being a pain in the butt to some of the patrol members, saying, you've got to do your proficiency, we'll try and do this. I tried to make it as easy as possible. A lot of the problems were the relocation to Swimming Creek, but the weather conditions didn't help either, and it wouldn't have helped if we'd been at Main Beach as well.
Thanks.
Thank you. No other question? Yes, Councillor Vance.
Ms. Morrison,
sorry, Councillor Angel.
An important part of the future for surf life saving is the nippers. Has it impacted the nippers training and all of that? I mean, that's probably a big concern for the future of surf life saving.
It has, in that we've managed to maintain, because we've had a changeover in nipper personnel, we've managed to maintain the numbers, and we have had a good roll up, even though it's been at Swimming Creek. But yes, what I couldn't actually say for sure what the long-term impact is going to be and what the impact will be if we're restricted from utilising our resources, because they had to relocate all of their gear too. And it was actually relocated to our boat shed opposite the golf club. But they only had to, they had to take the bare minimum out due to the notice of the time frame we were given.
Thank you. No other questions for Ms. Morrison? Thank you. And our second speaker is, again, as I said earlier, Peter Williams, who's the Vice Club Captain.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and councillors. I'd just like to first thank you for having us here and listening to us. I know you're very busy and time is very important, so we appreciate that fact. As Jane said, I'm aware that everyone here has received a copy of the letter, so I don't intend to go through the letter. I just intend to highlight some points within the letter. The first point I would like to highlight is the point that we are now bleeding money. We are losing money hand over fist. We are a voluntary organisation and every cent is crucial. And we're looking at ways that council could assist us to recoup some of that finance if possible. Secondly, we would like to be able to ensure access to the surf club and continued access to the beach, that access remain as is until the completion of the current life-saving services agreement, which I believe is the 25th of April 23. The other issue I'd like to raise is, and by no means am I casting a shadow on the council crews or the council workers or the council decisions, but we are interested in why the decision was made not to have the Sea Ward tendered out to a private firm that would specialise in that type of construction, considering the pressures that our council employees are under with the recent rains, the roads and so forth. And the last point I'd like to mention is one that was just brought up to me earlier. Could we please get qualification from a statement made by the council general manager that work at the surf club may not resume until the end of April 23? If correct, are council aware of the possible impact on the club for our next surf life-saving season?
Sorry, can I just get some clarification on that? What was the statement that work...
That work at the surf club may not resume until the end of April 23.
I'm interpreting that to mean that the beach would remain open and you would have access to the clubhouse?
That's correct. So we wouldn't start working
out. So they wouldn't... I think the... the general manager's comment, the intent was that as a result of some of the issues that it's caused, that council wouldn't resume work on the seawall until after your April, basically until the end of your season, which would allow you presumably to go back to Main Beach, access your club and do your normal activities until April. Is that what...
Certainly, Madam Mayor, it's one of the options we're considering at the moment. So my understanding was we decommissioned the site early December and opened up the car park. So the surf club has been able to trade relatively normally over the Christmas period. And one of the options we have moving forward is to take your advice on in that we wouldn't re-establish the site until the close of the surf club season. So we would commence construction again on the seawall post-April.
In relation to that, if that was to take effect, what guarantees would the surf club and the general people of Nambucca have that that wall would be finished and completed prior to the commencement of the next season and we would not be in the same situation that we have been this season?
Well, obviously in such a location it's really exposed to the weather, and it is weather dependent and relying on, you know, relatively calm seas and milder tides, but we would throw all the resources we have to at it over that winter period to make sure it's done. But again, there will be risks.
I suppose what I'm asking in a nutshell, would that the project at the beach be a high priority for the council to complete in consideration to all the other projects council have, which I'm not aware of, but I would imagine there would be quite a few.
I think what the general manager is trying to say is that it would be almost impossible to give a guarantee that it would be done by any particular date. You're quite correct. There's a significant amount of risk. All we need is, you know, we've seen the formation in the last week or 10 days, and there'll be more, presumably, for the rest of the cyclone season in North Queensland. Some of our worst coastal erosion and our worst flooding in the Nambucca Valley has been as a result of those cyclones coming down the coast, dropping into low pressure systems, crossing the coast, particularly when you get one after another. And of course, that's when there'll be problems at the seawall in terms of erosion, damage possibly to work that already has already been done. But the risk there is it'll also be the time that we have flooding and other issues on council infrastructure like roads and bridges that would also be a high priority. I don't think it's actually possible for us to be able to guarantee a time. But I will ask whether any of the staff are able to respond to your question about why this project didn't go out to tender. I'd be curious, because it's a question I asked myself in the past, as to, given our workload with flood damage and our normal maintenance schedules, this is obviously a very large project, and presumably there was a reason why it was being, well, reason why the choice was made to not go out to tender to a specialist contract and have our day crews do it. I know we've had a change over at staff. Is anyone actually aware of the background to that decision? I'm happy for someone to take it on notice if I've asked. Yeah.
We can take it on notice. We have a detailed response to the letter preparation for you guys.
Thank you. Just one other question, if I may. I've probably done the 5 minutes. If the decision to commence in April was started, and that was in concrete, that is going to affect our ability greatly to get someone to lease the upstairs of the surf club, which is one of our primary ways of getting funds for the club. If that was the case, are there avenues in which the council can help the surf club compensate the existing monies we've already lost, as well as the future monies we will lose, considering it'll be till April, and then the extension after until the seawall's completed before we can even look at putting somebody in there?
Can I ask a further question? I just want to get some clarification. Have Surf Club executive, all the councillors, I think everyone received a copy of the letter. It was forwarded by our records clerk to make sure. I know it was sent to all councillors, so I'm assuming all councillors read the letter. Has the senior executive of the Surf Club at this point had a meeting with senior staff at council yet?
No,
I don't believe so.
Okay, because the reason that I ask is that and again I've interrupted your presentation, but I think that perhaps that's something that needs to happen as a result of a public forum, because there's no staff recommendation or report. The councillors can't resolve to do any specific thing in response. But I will foreshadow now a motion that there be a meeting between the senior executive staff, that there be the plan A, plan B, look at the possible scenarios, the possible impacts, how council might be able to help, and also that motion would include a report back to the elected council on the outcome of that and how we might address the matters in your letter and that you've raised tonight. So.
And finally, I'd just like to extend an invitation to any council member, if they'd like to come down to the surf club. We're actually on patrol this Sunday. I know Sunday's not the best day. We do have a patrol there Saturday. The lifeguards are there until...
They're there till 5 o'clock.
Most days. Come down. You can have a look at the conditions that we have at the surf club and how we operate. And then we can, if need be, we can take you up to Swimmy Creek and show you the conditions up there. And it's because the conditions up there are difficult, we are losing people.
Okay. And presumably the longer this project goes on, the longer those issues. Okay. I just need to check whether any other councillors had a question for you. Peter? Mr. Williams?
Mr. Williams.
Councillor Vance.
Have you added up all the out-of-pocket expenses?
The club is in the process of doing that. They have got rough figures, but if need be, we can get down to dollars and cents.
Yeah.
I think that, like, in order to consider any assistance, council would need documented evidence to be able to...
We can provide that to the best of our abilities.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Williams. And councillors, I'll move that council senior staff arrange a meeting. I'm looking for the screens that aren't working. Council senior staff arrange a meeting with the executive of the Nambucca Heads Surf Life Saving Club. To discuss the matters raised in the public forum and the club's recent letter. That's point one. Point two, that the meeting the meeting consider
the issues raised in the letter.
Did I hear someone call out from the public gallery?
Yes, sorry.
Miss Morrow, you should know better than that.
I know, slapped my wrist.
And you didn't even put your hand up. Miss Morrison's school teacher should know better. I won't say any more. I've just remembered that this is being recorded. That the meeting consider options for the timing of continued work. And any contingency plans might need to be put in place in consideration of the surf clubs, the surf clubs patrol season and training requirements, and the council's work schedule . Is that a good way of sort of saying plan A, plan B for what your concerns are, what council needs to get done? If this happens and we get bad weather, what's plan B, that kind of thing, and perhaps some sort of agreement. And the third point is that a report come back to a council meeting regarding the outcome of that meeting. And any staff recommendations in response to the surf club's letter. Seconded, Councillor Buchanan. It's open for discussion.
Can we have that read back to us by the minute secretary, please? Because we've got
Because you can't see it. Look, I'm sorry. It. Yeah, it's really hard. It's hard when you
vote on it because
Or the general manager. Would someone read out the
Point one, that council's senior staff arrange a meeting with the executive of Nambucca Head Surf Life Zone Club to discuss matters raised in the public forum. Matters raised in the public forum and the club's recent letter. Point two, that the meeting consider options for the timing for the continued work and any contingency plans that might need to be put in place in consideration of the surf club's patrol season and training requirements and the council's work schedule and any staff's recommendations to the surf club's
level. Sorry, that should be point three. So it should be that the meeting consider options for the timing for the continued work and any contingency plans that might need to be put in place in consideration of the surf club's patrol season and training requirements and the council's work schedule. Then point three is that council receive a report on the outcome of the meeting. And any staff recommendations in response to the surf club's letter. Does anyone require it to be read out again? Is everyone? Essentially, it's just to have a meeting to discuss those matters. So it's not a motion for action on behalf of council, because as you're aware, we can't do that. Other than communication, which I don't think is not in order. It's not expenditure of money or a decision for council to do a specific thing. And then once that all happens, a report to come back to council about the outcome of that and any recommendations in response to the letter, which raised the issues regarding whether there's any financial assistance that we can provide. Obviously at this stage it's not possible to get answers on that, but after all of this happens, hopefully that report will not only provide the elected council with answers, that those answers will then be available also to the surf club. That's the objective of this motion. So is there any further discussion? If not, I'll put it. Those in favour? Against? It's carried. So who is the contact point? We got...
Oh, sorry. Can you put our president down, please?
Certainly. Madam Mayor, I'll organise a meeting as soon as we can.
Obviously, convenient to everyone. Thank you. Councillors, we still don't have any IT. Do we proceed? I'll just ask for some advice from the senior staff. Do we proceed with the meeting without it? Because council is able to see anything on their screens? Nothing.
No. We do have our...
If we can see the agenda. I mean, it's only when we change things we need to see it.
Mm.
I mean, practically, I reckon we battle on, because with the greatest deal of respect, I suggest our gallery is about to be cleared. So there's no member of the public who are missing out.
Yeah, it's more my question. Well, that's why we did that first. My question is for councillors. Are you happy to proceed?
If the recommendations change, that we're going to have any issue. Otherwise,
which is what just kind of happened then, because that was a recommendation that's not on.
If we have to read it out once or twice until people get it.
All right. Well, on that basis, we'll proceed. And if any councillor, if we get to a point where someone amends an existing recommendation or wants to move an additional motion or an alternate motion... and that's part of meeting procedure, they're perfectly entitled to do that. But if any other councillor wants it read out two times or three times, please speak up and we will do that, because I don't want to be in a situation where councillors are unsure of what it is that they're voting on. So if anything like that arises, please just raise your hand and we'll stop, and we'll make sure that before anyone votes on anything, we're all aware of exactly what the wording of the proposed resolution is. All right, on that basis, we'll go back to item 3, which was disclosure of interest.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I do have one disclosure of interest this evening, and that's from Councillor Troy Vance, and it's in relation to item 11.1. And he's declared a pecuniary interest. He believes the owner is a customer of his employer. Sorry.
Okay, thank you. We now go to the confirmation of the minutes. Councillors, of the ordinary meeting of the 15th of December.
Moved
Councillor Wilson, seconded Councillor Trevor Ballengarry, I think, was first cab off the rank. Are there any corrections to the minutes? None? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Notices of motion. We have one from Councillor Ricky Buchanan. On page 20, item 5.1, Councillor Buchanan, are you formally moving that? Do we have a seconder? Seconded Councillor Angel. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. We've completed the public forum at item 6. There are no questions with notice. None for closed meeting. So we'll go straight to the General Manager's Report, page 21, item 9.1.
Moved
Councillor Wilson. Seconded Councillor Trevor Ballengarry. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 34, item 9.2.
Moved
Councillor Genvey. Seconded Councillor Buchanan. Any discussion? Councillor Genvey.
I had quite a good look at this report. The intent, I think, is to remove the general manager from any matters associated with councillor conduct complaints. And I have two minds about that, because I can remember when I was a new young councillor and there was a not-for-profit and a council building and some members of the community were up in arms. And I put in a disclosure, non-significant, and people thought that I had a significant one because I knew the person talking, but I didn't really know his workplace and I didn't know his boss, and you know, so I was very glad the general manager, you know, he sent me some questions to answer, and basically stood in front of people saying I'd made the wrong comment. But I guess it can work other ways with councils that have problems with general manager. General Manager. So I am in two minds about that. But I would like to see, I think they're going to an independent panel review and then a commissioner, and I guess that's pretty good. They say there's a lack of clarity in the code of conduct concerning various classes of behaviours. So it would be nice to see the detail in what they consider classes of behaviours, and while they might strengthen the mayor's power to deal with disruptive behaviour, there's also an obligation of the mayor not to misuse that as well. So it's strengthened. I don't know. Anyway,
that in itself, Councillor Genvey, would be a breach of both the code of conduct and the code of meeting practice, and that would then put the chair or the mayor before the conduct review panel.
Yes. So. And also we go to audiovisual recorded meetings. So that's going to be an expense that needs to be in a budget when this comes through, if it's all agreed on with people agreeing to it all in submissions. So, yeah, there's some things to think about.
Well, I guess the key to all of this, councillors, is to behave well, abide by your code of conduct, abide by the code of meeting practice, because the one thing this is expensive. And if you look at, because I think you're aware that councils are required to publicly report on the code of conduct complaints. It's not a good look when there are complaints against councillors. And further, it's a very bad look when the ratepayers of this shire see how much dealing with those complaints cost. And the review panels and this system is going to be quite expensive, because my understanding is they are paid panels. Or they have been in the past. Yes, senior staff are nodding their heads. And it's quite an expensive exercise. Quite often, we have had some code of conduct complaints that have been able to be handled by the general manager. At that point, and if they can be resolved at that level, although there is a cost in terms of the general manager's time, at least there's not that expense. But if this comes into practice, every councillor who misbehaves is not only going to cause an expense to ratepayers, you also need to be aware that that will be publicly reported, including the cost. So, apart from that, if everyone behaved, we wouldn't need any of this, would we? All right, councillors. Councillor Jones.
Yeah, Madam Mayor, I hear your comments, and you're right, but there is also a flip side here, and we've all been in local government long enough to realise what a vexatious litigant looks like, and they can create absolute havoc. We haven't seen it so much in this council. I believe there may have been one or two in the last 6 years that I'm aware of, but I've seen other councils where a group or an individual or a group, for whatever reason, decides to pin the ears back and complain about absolutely everything. And if each of those complaints goes through this process, it's going to be a farce. And secondly, what we see here, again, is the lowest common denominator. This council has, I think, got a fantastic record. The 6 years I've been here, it's been pretty much impeccable. We have our disagreements and we have our arguments. That's all part of the good governance of local government. But some other councils who the conduct is truly appalling that's causing this problem. So I hear your words, but I think this is not as simple as it looks, and it only needs a bad player and it can make life very difficult for everyone, and not necessarily the councillor. The councillors could be pretty well in the right, but anyway, I'll leave it at that. But
again, if councillors abide by everything, yes, it may be we don't have the ability for the general manager to put a stop to it if it's vexatious or trivial, but if councillors have done everything by the book, the meetings are recorded, if they've kept the appropriate records, if they've put their emails and correspondence in the record system, if they've declared their conflicts of interest. It's a little bit like being accused of something when you go to court. There's got to be evidence. And, you know, if you've not done anything wrong and you can show that you have behaved impeccably, someone's got to be able to come up with convincing evidence to the contrary. So, yeah, and again, I suspect that there's probably going to be some sort of clause in there for a vexatious complainant. I do know that government agencies have a policy or a process to deal ultimately with someone who just becomes a vexatious complainant and it becomes clear that there's no substance to their complaints. Councillor Angel.
Madam Mayor, just for councillors and probably senior management, there was a council down in South Australia, the Onkaparinga Council. They recently had a council meeting which had a contentious decision to be made, and it's worth looking at. You know, it's an eye-opener, but in saying that, we're going to have potentially many of those over our time, and probably something we could look at for security, but it's a real eye-opener. But it's worth looking at if you get the chance, because there's some passion with people and the public, and when they have a public forum, that they can go. There's chairs getting thrown and all sorts of things. So. Down in South Australia.
But again, you know, there are occasions, taking up Councillor Jones's point, there are occasions where people make vexatious complaints to ICAC, you know, and you know, I can assure you that ICAC will do a preliminary investigation. If there's no evidence, they don't. You know, you don't get an ICAC investigation against a councillor unless you can provide ICAC with something fairly convincing of misconduct or corrupt conduct or whatever. They don't just. I think. I think Councillor X or Councillor Y is dodgy, and I'm sure that Councillor accepts paper bags from developers is not enough for... You've got to provide evidence, and I suspect this would be the same situation, that before something can be dealt with, I can't see them dealing with something that doesn't have any evidence attached to it. So, I mean, it's unfortunate, but it's just the nature of the role that we take on. I think even our new councillors have been councillors long enough to know that whatever decision that you make at a council meeting on any item, there are going to be people who think that you made the right decision, and there will be people in the community who think that you made the wrong decision. The best that you can do is make an informed decision, and hopefully, if the opportunity arises, provide the reasons behind your decision. I think most of you are more than happy to do that whenever you're asked, and you know, one of the benefits of, as Councillor Jones indicated, you know, we do often have significant debate over matters, but it's an opportunity for, if anyone's sitting in the public gallery, for councillors to speak for or against something, give their reasoning, and, you know, at least people go home. I have had members of the public contact me after a council meeting, particularly over some of those very controversial developments, and actually say that although they were not happy with the outcome or the final decision of council, that they were satisfied that all of the matters raised in submissions and all of the concerns had been aired, had been discussed, and that councillors were aware of them and considered them. And that's just the best that you're going to be able to do. At some point you've got to make a call, and not everyone's going to like it, but that shouldn't result in code of conduct complaints. Anyway, if there's no other discussion, I'll put the motion. Sorry, Councillor Jenby, are you voting?
No, that's, I'm voting for the motion.
Those in favour? Against? It's carried. No late reports from the General Manager, so we'll go to page 36, item 10.1. Moved, Councillor Jenby?
Yep.
Seconded, Councillor Wilson. Is there any discussion? Councillor Jenby.
I thought this the submission on behalf of council was quite considered, actually. So, could, if we drill down into all the things, we could take a dividend when we can, which might be great. We could have an interest-free loan amongst ourselves, but so we don't want it capped. But we want to be cautious about our returns on investment because of long-term planning and our IWCM models and performance monitoring and all that stuff. I wasn't quite sure. Well, I agree. Developer charges shouldn't be included as operating income. Not at the expense of delivering great service and making things work for our people. So, yeah. It was quite good.
Thank you. Is there any other discussion? I'd just like to thank Mr. Sykes, because as you're probably aware, normally a submission like this would come to council for endorsement before it was sent off, but this came up with a very short time frame, and I did indicate to Mr. Sykes and the General Manager and Mr. Hunt, who is still here, that I believed that the council would prefer that we got a submission in, and because Mr. Sykes had leave booked and it's quite a specialist area, so he more or less had to throw everything aside and get something put together and a submission in before he went on leave that had already been arranged. So thank you to Mr. Sykes for getting that done at very short notice, and that's the reason it didn't come to us as a report to council first, because the timing just didn't work. Councillor Janvey.
Can I just ask of our Chief Financial Officer?
No, he's our...
It's an old plate there.
Both at the moment.
Assistant, no. Are you assistant or director?
Director. So running two roles at the moment.
Okay. Director of Corporate Services. Through the General Manager. Simple question. What are, I just didn't quite know what this was, competitive neutrality principles?
Yeah, so through the General Manager, it's basically under national competition policy. It's about getting a level playing field between government businesses and the private sector. So it's saying if for council, if you're in the private sector, you'd be subject to paying, as an example, land tax. We don't actually pay it, but under national competition policy, if we were in the private sector, we would have to. So when we prepare our special purpose financial statements, they're prepared under national competition policy, and they show, well, if you had to pay land tax, this is what the notional payment would be.
Yep, okay.
Yes, yes, and that's a good point. The tax equivalent dividend component is based on that notional tax payment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's a mandated dividend, and then you have the optional dividend, which is the dividend from the best practice guidelines, the surplus. And one of my main gripes with that, and I've actually raised this with the OLG in the past, is that it stayed at that $3 for the tax equivalent per assessment and the $27 for the best practice since 2007.
Yes.
So.
Any other discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 40, item 10.2.
Media, is it?
Madam Mayor? Moved, Councillor Angel.
Yep.
Seconded, Councillor Vance. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? Carried. Page 42, item 10.3. Moved, Councillor Janvey. Seconded, Councillor Angel. Any discussion? Councillor Janvey.
The report from the from Joan Kelly, so the museum advisor, it was a little... Headland Museum is just struggling for volunteers, and, you know, some of the others have got a building, you know, to maintain. And
is this a question for staff?
It's just a comment that, you know, it's a little uneven between our museums, but they are really important. And, look, I do the AGM for the Headland Museum, and they do have quite a few volunteers, but it seems that the president's gone back to full-time work, and... you know, it's probably too much for, you know, there's sort of hints that it's...
So are you speaking against this?
No, I'm not. No, it's just that in the report...
Or for it?
Yeah, I'm speaking for the report, but it just highlights some of the problems in our museums with volunteers after COVID and volunteers having to maintain buildings or, you know, and, you know, one thing about the Headland Museum, it'd be great if it was uptown, you know, and a part of... being uptown, like it's a little bit isolated, and sometimes a free building is not as easy as it seems, you know. And if you go down to Port Macquarie and you see the museum there, it's fantastic. You walk around, there's dioramas of surfing in the 70s or, you know, Victorian Port Macquarie or convict Port Macquarie or whatever, and it's very vibrant. Ours are a bit like, sometimes a little bit like an antique shop or something with a lot of things. So, yeah, it'd be really great to have a strategic plan for our museums, that's all. Maybe I'm saying in the future.
I think
with big picture
Janvey, that's
Madam Mayor.
Yeah,
sorry.
That's a matter for perhaps a notice of motion or...
Yeah, okay. Well, you do wonder from the commentary how sustainable some of them are, and they're all
again,
good museums.
Take that information, and if you do believe that there's merit in some sort of a strategy, formulate it into a notice of motion or a request for a report, a notice of motion for a report on the merit of a strategy and let the staff investigate it. But that needs to be a separate motion to this one.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
So is there any further discussion on this motion? If not, I'll put it. Those in favour? Against, it's carried. Page 44, item 10.4. Moved Councillor Angel, seconded Councillor Wilson. Any discussion? Councillor Janvey.
Could I have... The recommendation's got point one and two, which is approve a budget variation, and the option two, what's the difference? Approve funding for the purchase of both those items. Is there a difference in just a budget variation so it goes into the budget, whereas the second option is to, you know, buy them now or whatever?
Through the General Manager. Councillor Genevieve, the first option is about, yeah, as it says, replacing the current CRM application because of the issues that Cyber New South Wales have detected. So it's pretty much, from a risk management point of view, we need to do something, and we need to do something now.
Yeah.
Recommendation two.
In the options, yeah.
Yeah, yep. Recommendation two is
approved sort of funding.
Like a bolt-on, and that's it's not necessary, but we think it would be beneficial as far as community relationships are concerned by having that community notification app, which is the Anteno solution.
Isn't point two the Anteno and the mobile capture solution as well? Yeah, it is. Recommendation.
Councillor Genvey's referring to the options, and the options are basically
the same as
option one basically means do nothing.
Yeah.
In other words, continue with what we've got, which
is
quite clear because of the cyber risk is not really an option.
Yep.
Option two says per the recommendation. And then option three is only to do half of it, and that's just the CRM.
I know, but per the recommendation, approve funding. What is the difference between approve funding and approve a budget variation? Aren't they the same?
It's the same thing.
So point two is the same as the recommendation then?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
That's why it says per the recommendation, approve funding, because... Point two in the recommendation is that we approve a budget variation to fund.
Yep.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, if I can, I'll speak to this. I actually wholeheartedly approve of both expenditures. Just going through a bank card fraud myself, and it's very debilitating. You know, I got a new card and it was compromised the next day. So I'm back in the same situation with some bot spewing out numbers because they've got details. So this cyber stuff is really, really important. And I also like the idea of the Anteno and the mobile capture for staffing. I mean, I think we might do some of that stuff in other areas, but it would be quite good because it would... capture stuff that we're meant to put into the CRM, which is what we were asking in an email, stuff about emails the other day a bit more. And I wasn't quite sure how it would, if people, where it's situated. Like you can ring in and say, oh, there's a really big pothole and that's in the system, which is great. But the fact that it would come up on, if you had your interest areas, means you have to have downloaded the app. I assume at home, is it from a user's point of view?
Is that a question for staff?
Yeah, I think so, yes.
Sorry, through the General Manager.
Talking a bit.
Yeah, Councillor Jimmy, my understanding is that it's a free app, and that when users subscribe to the app, they select their preferences. So there'd be like a range of topics. For example, road maintenance
might be one.
And they've also got their location as well recorded. So it would then, if there's new information come to light, it would push out a notification based on their selection of topic preferences plus their location.
Yep. I mean, it's a little bit of bring on the robots because there's less call centre stuff, but that's going to be the way of the world. So, I did have a question. So there's $36,000 in ongoing costs with the new system, and plus another, if you added the Anteno and mobile capture, it's another $1.2
Okay, so what are our SAS costs currently with CRM, like the ongoing servicing of the system? Because there's a new ongoing cost. Do we know what the SAS cost is? Of the current system we've got that's not very good and won't be serviced, and I'd have to take it on notice.
No, through the general manager.
Thought it had been covered there in the report.
Madam Mayor, I'm happy to take that. So, Councillor, in the under the existing thing, the SAS stands for Software as a Service, so it's essentially a licensing fee that we pay annually on our software systems.
Yeah.
And currently, January 2023 is a budget of $35,000, being $15,000 annual license fee plus $20,000 for additional online payments for the payment module. So, $35,000 what we're paying at the moment. Therefore, moving to the current CRM. The current CRM to the proposed CRM will require the budget variation of $23,000 and then plus the on cost. So we're paying $35,000
already.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's not going to be much difference then.
But on page 45.
Yeah. It's already there in the report. And of course, councillors, the other thing we have to consider is not only obviously the reputational cost, but the financial cost of a cyber security, a breach could be enormous. So even though it's a budget variation, I think it's a wise investment compared to the alternatives, possibilities of doing nothing. Councillor Angel.
Madam Mayor, I've got to obviously agree with Councillor Genvey on the importance of this. Probably a timely renewal, really, for us. Obviously, it's mid-January now, and the renewal's at the end of this month. Probably this is a question through the General Manager, Mr. Sykes. Is that instantaneous, that renewal? This just sticks over to the new program at the end of January, and it's a seamless sort of process and everything's protected moving on? Or
You're saying if we continue on through the General Manager,
you're
saying
the current CRM, the new one?
So the
updated? Yeah, yeah. Is it instant? The renewal finish is up for it at the end of January, and obviously there's 42,000 bits of information there from people around the valley. Is it a seamless straight over, or is it a...
Through the General Manager, I'm not sure, and I'd have to take that question on notice.
Yeah, no worries.
Okay. I think somewhere in the report it did say that it'd require a significant amount of work by staff just transferring the records.
Signing off on it.
Yeah, but... it says implementation 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming we'll still have the existing data, even though we're not continuing with CRM, we'll still have the existing data, so end of January we'll get the new system, but it'll take six... I interpreted this report that it's going to take 6 to 8 weeks to transfer that data across, but it's existing data we will already have.
Yeah.
Even if we're not continuing to pay for. Yeah.
That's correct.
Okay. Are there any other queries, questions, or is there any other discussion on this item? None? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 48, item 10.5. Moved Councillor Angel, seconded Councillor Wilson. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 57, item 10.6. Moved Councillor Angel, seconded Councillor Buchanan, I think was first thing. Any discussion? Councillors, just note that the next council meeting is at Borough Pine Hall, just a reminder.
We're meeting here and then all going out, or are we finding our own way out?
Well, normally we meet, anyone who requires transport would meet here, so you'll need to check with staff as to what time you need to be here and what time cars are leaving.
35, 40 minutes to Borough Pine Hall from here.
Well, put it this way, council shouldn't be paying vehicle allowance when there are council vehicles available. So if you choose to drive out there in your own car, you obviously can do that, but you shouldn't be then lodging a claim for the vehicle.
Can I just ask the councillors just to possibly give us 1 or 2 days' notice about who needs transport out there, and we'll make the arrangements here.
Well, I will definitely.
Everyone.
Fine.
Okay. Right, no other discussion?
So I was just going to ask a quick question on that.
Councillor Buchanan.
with it being at Borough Pine Hall, and like we just kind of mentioned that most of us would need a bit of assistance with getting out there, is it possible just to get some sort of a notification of getting closer, time you'd like to leave council here, so that we can arrive here on time to head off?
Certainly. Well, given that the advice for the meeting is 5 o'clock arrival for a 5:30 start, I'd envisage leaving the council chambers here just after 4 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe 4:15.
For those new councillors that haven't had what we used to call an away meeting, there's normally sort of a half hour or so opportunity to simply socialise, meet local people. Quite often some of the hall committees are very generous and will put on a cup of tea or coffee and some afternoon tea, just a chance to socialise first, and then we commence the formal meeting. So they usually are held, like we need to be out there about half an hour or so at least earlier than the meeting commencement. But I'll ask the general manager if perhaps one of the BSU staff could send out, someone could send out a reminder to councillors just for this particular meeting of, because you're going to want them to notify, you're going to need to know how many council cars to take out, so.
We certainly will, Madam Mayor. We'll send out the arrangements in plenty of time for everyone.
So that will tell you what time you need to be at the council chambers, but councillors are going to have to ensure they respond to the BSU staff, because they'll need to organise vehicles. Councillor Trevor Ballengarry.
Be aware of the road conditions out there.
people who drive on them.
Councillor Ballengarry, don't you know what happens? Well, you're a new councillor. Don't you know what happens when the council meeting's going to be out in a rural hall? Lo and behold, the road gets graded about a week beforehand.
What a chance.
Fancy that.
I just thought I'd throw that in so that if you've got good air suspension, good luck to you.
Thank you, Councillor Ballengarry. We'll keep that in mind. All right, those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 58, item 11.1. Councillor Vance is leaving the chamber as he's declared a conflict.
Madam Mayor.
Moved Councillor Angel, seconded Councillor Wilson. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Can we have Councillor Angel back, please? Sorry, Councillor Vance. It's got my move a second mixed up with my departing councillor. Councillor Vance has returned. We'll now go to page 60, item 11.2. It's page 60, councillors, on your iPad, even though your front agenda, I think, says page 61.
Move that, Madam Mayor.
Councillor Angel, seconded Councillor Vance. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 61, item 11.3. Moved Councillor Genvey, seconded Councillor Wilson. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? Carried. No late reports from Development and Environment. So page 62, item 12.1. Move Moved, Councillor Angel. Seconded, Councillor Trevor Ballengarry. It's open for discussion. Well, I've got a number of questions, but Councillor Genvey, if you'd like to.
So we get about 80k per lane kilometre rate, and then it mentions two additional quotes plus a contingency of about 23k. So and then the data storage costs on top of that. But if you add the 80k to the 23k contingency, you get that 102 figure. But it said they were waiting on two additional quotes in the opening summary. So I'm not sure if there's extra expenses there. And, you know, data storage costs have a somewhere between 20 and 40k, so they're not very accurate. They're a little bit rubbery. I wanted to know if we've missed out on disaster funding because the renewal figures are out, like if our roads were undermined that much, we might not have put in accurate figures. And also, I mean, outsourcing for consultants, is this just a sort of strategy? Like, would our staff usually do this work? Should they?
Councillor Genvey, how about one question at a time, and we'll ask for a response.
Just like this. All right.
Yes. Now we'll go back to.
Have we missed out on any disaster funding?
Well, your initial question from memory your initial one related to the comment that we have a quote for 80,000, but we're waiting on two extra quotes, and you were worried that it might cost more than what is here.
Yep.
Now, I've interpreted that we have a quote that is satisfactory, and we actually have a written quote for 80,000. If I may, through the general, or ask the general man, well, it's Councillor Genvey's question, but does that mean that there's a possibility of more quotes coming in and it will be cheaper? But So we have a quote for the 80,000, but we are waiting on two other quotes.
Okay, I got
they might be less, and if they are, we might consider them. But otherwise, you're approving the 80,000. Okay, that's the first question. Now, your second part of your question. Your second question.
Have we missed out on disaster funding because our sort of renewal figures are out? Our road renewal,
Well, the disaster funding doesn't cover the maintenance, but it does cover landslips, well, bottom side, not top side.
Then how do we're going to defer Kuta rehabilitation at Vallet Beach, and any unspent funds from this will go back to Vallet Beach and plus with natural disaster funding. So that's the equation.
I'll ask the General Manager, and he's indicated it's a question Mr. Sykes might be able to respond to.
Through the General Manager, and Mr. Walsh might correct me if I'm wrong on any of this as well, I'm not sure about previous claims, but my understanding is with the natural disaster requirements now, there's a very strong emphasis on having pre-disaster evidence, so photos and the like, which we are deficient. So that's one of the benefits of engaging this contractor, is having that data there available for current and future claims.
Okay.
But if I can ask a supplementary question, that doesn't mean we necessarily don't claim. It just means that we're not in as good a position to prove that it was flood damage or natural disaster damage.
Through the General Manager, correct. That's my understanding.
Yeah. How often do they expect us to run around and take these photos, gather this evidence? Because photos could be a few years old and have no damage right up until the flood event or the natural disaster, and then,
I have a few questions that I'll ask in a moment, and some of the answers might
thinking about Google, Google Maps. You could go and have a Google Maps, but it might be that long ago. And how do you prove that the disaster...
Well, the whole point of integrated planning and reporting is that we should be... This is an ongoing... It's not something that you do once and you put on the shelf.
No, I get that, but you
And that's part of the problem that we are actually facing here is because... To a degree, that's been our approach.
I agree with that, Madam Mayor, but I'm saying we've all experienced on this council 3 12-inch events in a 6-week period, when rain, you know. So sometimes it's hard to attribute what, and you can't run around and photograph every...
No, but I suspect that some of the issues that we're facing in terms of our condition rating has got nothing to do with floods. This has been an ongoing issue, as you will have seen in... some of our budget results prior to natural disasters.
I'm talking more to the regulatory authority who are gauging our submissions around natural disasters.
Oh, yeah, okay. You mean the photographs of the before and after?
About our behaviour. I'm talking about how hard it is to comply with their expectations. But I suppose they have a right to be flexible. Or
Okay. I'll just go back. Councillor Jenby had a third question.
Yeah, it's just around... consultants, really? Like, should this have been work that our staff have done, should do? And is this just a new way of managing? You know, haven't got a director in place? Like, is it a temporary thing? Or should our staff have been on top of this and do it as...
Yeah, through the general manager, Mike. Very limited understanding of the situation is that this is a specialised piece of equipment that goes around, I believe it's got ground penetrating laser.
This is not like the old Bankel and beam testing, is it?
Do we have any?
Yeah.
Oh.
So it's specialised equipment that we don't possess.
Put a water barrel with a spirit level on the back of a ute and drive it round and you'll get the same result.
Madam Mayor, one of the biggest advantages of doing it this way is the ground penetration, because it's really the substructure of the roads that we're trying to get at and ascertain their condition, because you will have noticed when that's not right, you can fix the potholes in a dirt road and 2 weeks later you'll be back there fixing the same potholes again because the substructure of the road's basically gone. So this is really about getting a snapshot of the condition of our roads at that substructure level.
So does this testing actually show, like the old Bankel and beam was more about densities and surface, will this testing actually tell us how much road base, as in how much DGB 20 there is, how much
subgrade,
will it actually tell us that?
Yeah.
Okay. So it'll tell us, you know, on a road where basically there's either only half an inch of road base where there should be 6 inches. So we'll know not to go and do a reseal over the top of cracked bitumen, which we tend to do. Like, what do we call that? A rehab. When we do road works, and I understand they're still considered capital works, could I ask Mr. Sykes, is it... AS27, the old Australian Accounting Standard 27, still apply?
Through the General Manager, no, Madam Mayor, that's dead in the water, AS27.
Okay, so what happens, like, is there something where, I think under that old standard, anything that extended the life, any maintenance that extended the life of an asset beyond 12 months could be was capital works?
AASB 116, Infrastructure Property Plan Equipment, addresses anything to do with infrastructure assets. There's also, which would come into play here as well, AASB 13 fair value measurement, which looks at getting current assessments of your assets. So if you believe that it's materially moved in value since you last valued it, then you should be doing that assessment on an annual basis.
Which goes back to a degree to Councillor Jones's question about these records being kept accurate and up to date.
So hence that comment in the report about this has got a high possibility of triggering a comprehensive revaluation for our financial statements.
Well, the other thing I was thinking of in terms of, you know, when I see roadworks, general roadworks done, we either do what I think the staff call a rehab, which is basically doing a seal over the top of the existing bitumen without working the subbase. And then there's a reconstruct, which is basically dig it all up, ensure that you've got your subbase. So this this recommended process would actually tell us on a road. I'm quite sure councillors have seen roads where we've done a rehab and it's lasted for years. Others, we've done a rehab and within 6 months, or we've had contractors do a rehab and within 6 months it's falling apart. And my suspicion has always been that there's been no subbase under it, which is the reason the first one failed. And of course, so would this actually potentially save us money in telling us when a section of road needs a rehab or when it needs a reconstruct? Is that... I'm not quite sure who to ask. Yeah, it's an end.
Through to General Manager, Madam Mayor, yes, the ground penetrating equipment will identify the depth of the sub base, yeah, and enable staff to identify which roads to go to first and how what the most appropriate method will be to rectify, which will save those costs.
Yeah, so in other words, there's potential to save money in terms of not doing a rehab on a road that has disintegrated underneath, but we just don't know it.
Yeah.
Or for that matter, digging up a road, it might be cracked and crazed on the top, digging it up and then finding out that it's got 2 feet of DGB20 under it and probably could have just been sealed over the top. Okay, thank you. Were there any other queries? I had a couple of questions. We're a little away from that. Also, councillors, I just wanted to, before we go any further, I just wanted to tidy up the wording of the existing recommendation. So who were the mover and... Councillor Angel and Councillor Trevor Bowen-Gary, you were the mover and seconder. I found it a little bit confusing. The way the recommendation one is worded, it's talking about an assessment of the sealed and unsealed road network. When you go down into your discussion in the first paragraph, it says many of the projects are already included within the current CapEx program, and those that were not were ground truth to ensure and test their validity. So that kind of made me wonder whether there were some that weren't. But anyway, I'd like to just add in point one, engage a contractor to undertake a condition assessment of council's entire sealed and unsealed. I think that's the intent, isn't it?
That's correct, Madam Mayor.
Yeah, so I just want to make sure it's the whole road network, not the confusion that's there in the discussion. And in point two, when you read point one, transfer the remaining to... Then it's got little I and the two I's. Number two should read increase work order 1046 because that's an existing. Just doesn't make sense when you read part one and then point two. It reads, transfer the remaining 2022-23 budget on work order 3839 Urban Streets Rehabilitation Project at Kuta Avenue, Valor Beach of $142,902, work order 1046 computer equipment budget by. So I think it means to increase work order, yes. So are the mover and seconder happy to just have that wording change, just to make it very clear that point one is a new work order, whereas number two, we're increasing an existing work order. Okay, the concerns I had about this were impacts that this is going to have on future financial projections. I think councillors are well aware that we're going to have a very serious look at a special rate variation. But what this report tells me is that the information that our current budget, you know, our annual delivery plan, our long-term financial plan, our asset management plans, all of the things that, all of those things are based on information which this report tells me is inaccurate. So I'm concerned about the financial implication. It needs to be done. I'd be the first to say, you know, we need to do this and we need to have accurate information. But when do we expect this to be completed? Because for a special rate variation, we have to go to IPART and we have to go to the community. Can anyone tell me when we'll actually have the updated information?
Yeah.
So, we'll put it this way. Will we have it, you know, we're getting close to the end of this financial year, so it's not going to get to us for a budget review or whatever. But are we going to have it for, in time for the 23-24 IPNR process? Otherwise, we're going to do a budget and a long-term financial plan and possibly a special rate variation based on old and inaccurate information.
Staff would be working on budgets now, wouldn't they? Like,
it's no good working on a budget. Our budgets are based on the information. That's what IPNR is all about. I keep harping on this, I know, but our budgets are based on having at the start accurate information about the current condition of an asset and what it's going to cost to either bring it in maintenance, to either bring it up to a serviceable level, or what it's going to cost to replace it and what its useful life is and when is it going to need replacing. Now, this report is telling me that a lot of the information we currently have has proven to be inaccurate. So what that means is, and this report does refer to, you know, the this is possibly going to create the requirement for a complete re-evaluation, and that's going to change, possibly, you know, bring forward items that will need to, you know, the useful life of something may be much shorter than it than is what in, is in our long-term financial plan. It means bringing things forward. It might mean that we can push something out and bring something forward, but it also might mean that we've just got to bring it all forward, but then how do we fund it? Like, we have to plan now for not just this year. We've got to look at the long-term and cumulative impacts of this information. But, you know, we're required to do that under the Act and think of 10 years' time. So, and of course, the other thing that's not mentioned in this report is what impact does this have on our maintenance budgets? Because this is telling me, I mean, you know, the report's not hiding anything. It clearly tells us that the condition of our roads is much worse than what is documented. And it's that documentation that gets a price put on it that then feeds into all of our financials. So we're going to have sort of financial, you know, a long-term financial plan that says this, but our actual financial statements are going to show something completely different, and that's something that I guarantee, or I shouldn't say that, I'm not an expert, I suspect that IPART would question and auditors may question. But I'll ask if Mr. through the General Manager if Mr. Sykes can make any comment on whether I'm getting overly concerned about nothing.
Through the General Manager, Councillor Jenvey, to your question, the 23-24 budget process will be opened up in early February.
Okay.
There's had to be a change in the timeline because of the organisational restructure and the impact that that's got. And we're proposing a fairly tight turnaround to meet the councillor workshop, so it'll be by the end of February. So, yeah, not a lot of time. So ideally, before you open up that process for submissions, you should have your asset management plans available because that should be informing your maintenance and your capital budgets, ideally. Also cognizant that in the background we've got consultants out working on AMPs at the moment, asset management plans, so really this data should be informing that process. Yes. Also.
Yeah.
And yes,
auditors, well, not auditors, IPART, would have, they'd be challenging the accuracy of the council's strategic planning, the asset management plans and the long-term financial plan, if they see a significant gap between the forecast results and where actuals trend.
Mm.
I've been down that path before where they've challenged that space, and rightly so, because it puts question marks over the accuracy of your forecasting. And then, yeah, potentially this has got issues with the financial statements as well, could have resourcing issues as far as trying to meet statutory deadlines, dependent on how late or dependent on what time we receive that information.
Yep.
I think that second part was in response to my question. So do we have any idea how long it's going to take? Like, how long before we actually get the results of this consultancy? Do we know?
Through the General Manager. Madam Mayor, we don't have a time frame of how long it will take. Obviously, we have to wait for the two quotes to come in and then engage the successful contractor to engage. So at this stage, it's unknown, but staff want to get it moving out as soon as possible.
And will it be possible, I suppose, to at least give priority to the capital expenditure items that are, if we get the information early enough, that are in the current budget, but certainly those that are earmarked or that the staff have already identified for the next budget?
Through the General Manager, I'd have to take that on notice. I'm not too sure how
you understand what I'm getting at, that if we're preparing next year's budget, and I'm quite sure the staff already have in mind, you know, particular roads or sections of roads that need to be, I'm just wondering whether it's possible to, well, it's obvious, you know, staff may ask the consultants, whether it's possible that they look at those roads first, because we're going to put money in the budget. If it's way out of whack, then, you know, we're faced That's with a budget review or robbing Peter to pay Paul and juggling. So the more accurate information and the more accurate costing we can then apply in a budget to begin with, the better, is just the point that I'm making. Councillor Janvey.
Look, I know we've got budgets sitting here and technical asset registers and remaining useful life and written down value, all that sums there. But there's those interesting words that are used in this document of ground truthing. So we all know, we drive on these roads a lot, where they're bad. So there must be a sense, even though those figures from the consultant's report will be far more informative and more accurate, but we must know our worst roads and our worst areas or whatever.
That's what we generally do, and that's what I mean about the staff will already have in mind roads that are bad. But what this is about is knowing just how bad. Once you know how bad, in other words, as Mr. Walsh explained, once you know that you know a road's bad.
Yes.
But once you know that it's got no sub-base underneath, you know that there's your repair or replacement cost is going to include completely replacing the sub-base. If you don't know that, you might put in your budget a replacement or a repair cost to do a rehab, which is to just put a seal over the top of the existing minor potholes and cracks. But what you're actually doing is sealing over something that's got no sub-base under it. So the point I'm labouring is that staff will have a very good idea of which roads are bad or whatever, but what we need is accurate information about their condition in terms of what is required to either repair or replace and when and at what cost. Because that's the thing that we have to be concerned about as councillors, because A, we're responsible for the budgets, for the long-term financial plan, and for considering a special rate variation. And if our roads are in significantly worse, just say, for example, they're 10% worse in terms of the cost of repair and replacement, Like, what was our engineering budget worth last year?
Sorry, I'm off the top of my head.
Well, I think our total expenditure,
35.
Capital Works, I think it was about.
Yeah. Through the general manager, I think our capital expenditure was up around the 20 million.
It was around 20 million, and I think our overall engineering budget with maintenance was something like 35 million. But, like, just look, a 10% increase in that, and consider that a 1% rate increase gives us around $110,000.
That's
correct. But do you see, I know it can be very important. So when you go for a special rate variation, you also need to know how much money you're going to need to maintain the existing service level, and if you want to bring those roads up to a better standard and improve the service level, how much extra you're going to need. How do we do that as councillors when we haven't got a clue what it's going to cost? And the reason we don't know what it's going to cost is because we don't really know the condition and what's required. I mean, it's not rocket science, but I know it gets confusing, but ultimately, that's our job as councillors. So,
one of the things this could inform would be that notion of build back better, you know, which is also climate change related. So, you know, if we're getting more in heavy inundation, we may need to do things differently to make them last longer. You know, some sort of quality repair. So, that could be used in a some of the submissions about building back better.
Well, I think it goes for anything. The more accurate information you start with when you make a plan for anything for the future, better chance you've got of pulling off that plan. So I guess we don't have much choice but to do this and get more accurate information. Is there any other discussion? And can we... Sorry. Councillor Buchanan.
One more thing, just a quick question and then I'll follow up on that. So will this be a tender that comes back to council? A question for the general manager or whoever?
No, I don't believe would trigger that. So once we get the three quotes and it's assessed internally, then we'll award the contract and get on with the works.
But so then following that on what the Mayor's already mentioned, is it possible for I guess council staff and the general manager to take on notice that we would like that or we would prefer that I guess where we begin is where our staff believe we'd like to start in our next budget, so the items that or the locations that are to be looked at for the next budget, we prioritise those in beginning this process. Is it something that we could persuade you to?
The general manager saying before was about capital works in the existing budget that we, and they would be works that we haven't commenced or process of doing at the moment. This would be the higher priority.
Well, that'd be the first priority, and that's why I was asking when we would have this information, because ideally, like, this information should then feed into our asset management plans and then into... It's going to be no time before we're planning the 23-24 or going through the 23-24 IPNR process. So that's why I want that information as soon as possible, but I suspect that we're not going to have it in time. For our next budget.
We will align
with
the capital works program to make sure we're doing that.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was just asking that in that particular way because...
Can we get that information back?
Well, I understand that we may not be able to get it ready for this very next round coming up, but as we do come into the next financial year and we do look at the next lot of budgets after this, we may be able to, I guess, prioritise the things that we've noticed, and it's up to staff to work with the contractors. But obviously, we agree that, and we would like to make sure that whatever the issues are that come up are prioritised, and whatever council staff believe should be, I guess, prioritised should be done. So we're, I guess it's kind of support for you lot to, that we are pretty sure that you can do your job the way it should be done, and I guess show that we want the priorities to be kind of shown and brought forward, I guess. Yeah, that's why I asked it that way. I'm not...
Well, maybe just an email could be sent round to all councillors once you've had the opportunity to talk to either the chosen contractor or potential contractors as to when, what priority they can give and when they think that they can produce the information. As I said, it'd be good if we have it before we start the next budget process, but even then the staff would then have to feed that into asset management plans. Are they going to be ready for the next budget process?
Through the General Manager, Madam Mayor, it's hoped at this stage. It's still in progress with the consultants, but they're hoping sometime next month is the is the aim.
Are you telling me to live in hope? Live in hope every day, Mr. Walsh. Thank you. Councillor Jones.
I mean, the other difficulty we have is, I don't know how many kilometres of roads, I have 800 in my head, but...
745.
That's a massive amount of data. But I presume, Councillor Buchanan, I think it was clear that at least the staff will be able to go to those parts that they want to see first. So I think that was a point well made.
Mm. And
don't have to get the whole 754 in, but if we can go to the pinch points, if you like.
And the ones that are in our current capital works program as well, because, you know, if they blow out, the sooner we know whether our estimates or what we've worked on was accurate, the sooner we can, whether it's good, bad or indifferent, you know, whatever the news is, knowing what it is and being able to then work with that or deal with it or do what you need to do. But sort of guessing is never as good as having accurate information. But anyway, if there's no further discussion, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Against? It's carried. There are no late engineering reports, so could I have a motion to go to closed? Moved Councillor Buchanan, seconded Councillor Vance. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. We'll close the doors and we'll go to closed meeting paper. Councillors will now return to open meeting, and I'll ask the General Manager to read the resolutions made in closed.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. In relation to item 13.1, tender for the upgrade of Nambucca Water Supply Lime Dosing System, it was resolved that Council not accept the tender received for Moore Management Pty Ltd. Recall tenders for the upgrade of the Nambucca Valley Water Supply Lime Dosing System. In relation to item 13.2, matters regarding realised or potential losses, Council resolved that the information concerning incidents where there is a realised or potential loss of funds and or reputation be received. In relation to item 13.3, confidential report tender T 37223NAM for the supply and delivery of electricity to small mass market sites, Council resolved that they award the tender T37223NAM to supply retail energy to Council's small non-contestable sites for a period of 24 months to AGL, commencing on 1 February 2023 to 31 January 2025, to endorse the tender evaluation report to supply retail energy to Council's small non-contestable sites for a period of 24 months, and 3, upgrade the contract register.
Thank you. And councillors, there being no further business, I'll thank everyone for their attendance and their courtesy and declare the meeting closed.